Welcome to the Fordcast, a Harrison Ford podcast. We watch all of Harrison Ford's movies. Welcome. We are recording this before the election, so thank you for joining us from the comfort of your bunker or the window of your hellscape.
Yep. I hope the devil likes this podcast and he is letting it continue to air. Yeah. After the gates of hell have opened.
Sure, it's something to listen to while you wait.
While you wait to see if you get picked off or not.
Yeah, so hello, November 10th.
Oh boy.
Yeah, oh boy is right. But the election, which, as you're listening to it, is passed, is Rachel's birthday.
It is, November 8th.
How will you celebrate?
I'm going to dinner with my mommy, and then we're going to get facials the next day.
Ooh, very girly. Facials, obviously, like, you know, in the, you know, like, spawn of Satan.
Yeah. I want my face to look like Donald Trump, so we're going to just get facial reconstructions.
Interesting. Because that's going to be the law now.
Yeah, we all have to look like Donald Trump.
I cannot wait for the future. Can't wait for my time machine.
Get my time machine and go back to the 1940s.
1940s?
Is my favorite time period.
You know, it's so interesting because I always used to say that, and then someone was nice enough to remind me. There was a really scary war going around, but it's cool for us because we know it works out.
Yeah. I like learning about it and stuff, but I, like, yeah. I know if I ever went back, everyone would be, like, freaking out. Like, no, it's cool.
It's cool, guys. It's okay. We're just here. We're tourists.
I'm just looking. I'm in London. There's bombing. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
We'll all be good. So I just wanted, before we delve into Frantic, which I think is sort of the appropriate after election in America episode.
Frantic! Yeah.
Is some mistakes from last time.
Oh, boy.
I know, right? And also some I think, just sort of, not even just mistakes, but like little attaches on to, which are nice. So I confused Keith Carradine and Robert Carradine. Which is odd for me because I saw Keith Carradine on Broadway, my first Broadway show in Will Rogers' Folly. So Keith Carradine, who was Martha Plimpton's dad, was not the guy in Revenge of the Nerds. That's his half-brother, Robert Carradine. Okay. Keith Carradine is the president and madam secretary, so I apologize for that. I figured it out as soon as I got home. I was like, ah, damn. Going a couple episodes back, Romancing the Stone was the movie that Jewel of the Nile was the sequel of that I couldn't think of. And this is something interesting. I did actually find out the role in Terms of Endearment that Ford was possibly going to, well, was offered. And it was actually not the Jeff Daniels part. It was the Nicholson part, which I think would have made it a completely different movie.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have worked just because of his age. And it's funny that him and Jack Nicholson have sort of kind of been like following each other, like being offered the sort of the same things.
Yeah, it's weird.
And I forgot to mention that from Mosquito Coast last time that Harrison was nominated for a Golden Globe and Witness did win 2 Academy Awards. So I forgot to mention that.
Nice.
Just wanted to sort of follow up and, you know, take where we are, which is 1987. What were you doing in 1987?
I was a thought in my dad's penis. I did not exist.
I did.
I'll eventually exist as we work our way out.
I know. It's sort of fun to sort of slowly get to the points where, like, we can kind of, like, have, like, thought and, like,
I remember when this came out.
Yeah. No, I don't remember when this came out. I actually do remember watching it and then seeing the movie again. I think that I never actually saw the beginning.
I watched it at the gym.
Well, recently, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but, like, years ago, like, if there was any, you know, childhood memories. That's really it. I'm pretty sure I turned it on when he's falling off the roof.
Okay.
So I thought, this is a really, like, fast-paced movie.
No, it's not.
It's not.
At all.
In fact, funny enough, Harrison thought that calling it Frantic was a mistake because it gave an expectation that could not be sort of realized and that he thought it should have been called Moderately Distressed. He said Polanski was not amused.
Yeah, Polanski doesn't seem like the type.
No. Well, we'll get to that later. But so this is sort of interesting where Harrison was in his career. He did make a film in 1987. That didn't come out, I should say. So this is a movie came out in 88, actually. But he was filming it before that. So he has sort of a little bit of a gap between films. But also his son was born.
Malcolm
was born. So that could also maybe be an example. Or just being so exhausted from Mosquito Coast. Like, it took a lot out of him.
Yeah.
He brought a lot of that into his own life, which happened again with Frantic, which we'll get to. So the only reason that Harrison really got involved in this movie is because his wife, Melissa, was working with Roman Polanski and also Spielberg producing an adaptation of Tintin, which Spielberg eventually did with Stephen Moffat from Doctor Who, which is interesting. And there was a lot of international terrorism at the time. It's interesting. I feel like a couple of years ago, we could go, oh, we have to tell everybody like how it must have felt. But I feel like now, with things that are happening all over the world, that
ISIS, we totally get it.
Yeah, and particularly in Paris. So he was feeling very nervous. She was 6 months pregnant, and so he traveled with her. In fact, something that Harrison talked about around this time is that he was always very worried, not necessarily just because of international terrorism, but worried for his wife. It was sort of his pretty much defines my reality was his pitch. His quote. So he ends up talking with Polanski, and the script is in French, so he can't read it. Roman Polanski, who directed this movie, sort of pitches him the story, and he said, well, if it's that exciting, you know, or half as exciting, you know, I definitely want to do this movie. So you have Harrison Ford, who can relate to this because he feels very protective of his wife. And then we have Roman Polanski, who we'll get into in a moment, has also a reason to feel protective of a wife. I'm trying not to talk about that yet, because we also have that at this time he turned down Big.
Harrison Ford did?
Yes.
He was supposed to be Tom Hanks?
Yeah.
He couldn't do the down down baby. I watched that video today. Oh, it's where great. Tom Hanks is doing it.
Oh, it made me like tear up a little bit. If anyone doesn't know, there is a video of, they said it was a fan, but I'm trying to figure out if it was someone who was also an interviewer.
I think it was a guy interviewing him, but it was like a big Tom. He was
okay.
A big Tom Hanks.
Because I was like, how did they get that close? But yeah, he asked him to do the song from Big, and they did it.
Down down baby,
baby down down. Yeah. And the hand movements and everything. We'll put a link on our show notes. It's great. But they also offered it to De Niro, apparently.
Why?
I don't know. I feel like they kept offering everything to De Niro.
And then Tom Hanks became America's dad.
He did. I love Tom Hanks. So that's sort of the update of that. So, before we talk about Roman Polanski, I wanted to give everyone who might not be familiar with him a little bit of a timeline of his life.
Oh, boy.
Don't worry, it's Cliff Notes.
Polanski.
So, this is a movie that has a little controversy behind it because of Roman Polanski, if people are not aware. And we're not going to spend too much time talking about it, but it is sort of an interesting subject that has come up a lot lately. Can you still enjoy somebody's piece of art if personally...
They're
if they're a terrible person. Well, we're... Yeah.
With Roman Polanski, I give him a little bit more credit than I give someone like... Woody Allen.
That's interesting.
Because Roman Polanski's life sucked.
That's what I want. See, let's put a little pin in that. I just want to talk about this first, and then we'll open up the discussion. Okay. So Roman Polanski was born in France. He lived in Poland during World War II, and his family died in Auschwitz, mm-hmm. his entire family. He moves to America. He marries the actress Sharon Tate, who in 1969, where she was 8.5 months pregnant with their son, was murdered by the Manson family.
Clan.
Family.
Wasn't a family?
They were called the Manson family.
Really? I thought they were the Manson clan.
Well, I'm sure maybe, but they refer to themselves as the
Manson even creepier.
Something that also overlaps this with other people we've talked about on the show... He went there, Manson, to look for the people who had lived there previously, who had been Candace Bergen and her boyfriend at the time, who was Doris Day's son, who was a producer, music producer, because he wouldn't produce his music, I think. I'm not quite sure. And this was all in Benedict Canyon, mm-hmm. which became sort of famous for that.
Well, that's one of the most famous Manson kills, because that's where he wrote Helter Skelter on the walls.
Yeah. And then what we're alluding to here, if people are not aware, in 1977, Roman Polanski was tried and convicted of statutory rape, mm-hmm. and then he escaped the country before he was sentenced. Mm-hmm. He had already served I didn't write this down, I think like 90 days in jail and under like psychiatric. And then something else, after they did the movie in 2009, he was held in Zurich and they were trying to extradite him to the United States. And Harrison, along with 100 people in film, the film industry signed a letter to try to get him out. So some people were disconcerted that Harrison signed this letter. What I think is interesting, though, on an other side, is that sometimes you just don't have all the information, as we don't, so we're not necessarily, you know, say what happened. But I read this really interesting article that Emma Thompson, who I'm a huge fan of, had signed this letter, and then her son was in college at the time, and a friend of his was like, can I just talk to your mother and tell her why I think she shouldn't sign this letter? And she said, okay. And so they met in a room and she talked to her and she didn't say what she said, but when she walked out, she took her name off the letter. And this is, Emma Thompson is a very political person. She stands up for what she believes in. She speaks out about a lot of feminist issues, Greenpeace. She's very vocal mm-hmm. about, you know, what we need to do as a society. So that was just sort of something interesting to say in regards to Harrison. And I think it's hard when it's your friend. You know them in a certain way. You don't know them as this quote-unquote monster or for what they've done that other people are saying. Like, Felicia Rashad still sticking up for Bill Cosby.
Yeah.
Like, it must be very hard when an idea of someone that you love and care about is completely shattered because maybe they were somebody else.
Yeah. I feel like I love Woody Allen movies and I still watch them, but
so
I don't like Woody Allen as a person. And I feel like with Roman Polanski, all I know is that it was statutory rape, which means that he necessarily didn't rape someone. It was more she was underage, which is still messed yeah. up.
And I know in Europe, there are yeah. different age, not only requirements, but different age in the society, I mm-hmm. guess, that's considered adult. Although I feel like you should know the rules of the country that you're in. And then there's a whole thing with the girl and she's okay with it now, but she wasn't before. It's very complicated. And I actually kind of don't want to get to that because we don't know, but Woody Allen was not tried and convicted.
Yeah. But I don't know. I guess I give Roman Polanski a little bit more of the benefit of the doubt than I do Woody Allen.
What of all the charges, what do you think is true with Woody Allen then?
Oh, like having all of his kids say that he like sexually assaulted his children. I'm like, okay, no, like that's messed up. He clearly did it if all of his kids are saying he did it. Like his one son on like is very open about the fact that he sexually assaulted his siblings.
Don't say siblings. He was accused of assaulting one child.
Okay, well, his sibling then.
Yeah.
Still, it's messed up.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of Woody Allen, and we don't know what happened.
Yeah.
But there is sort of that fine line. I think that it's hard though. I mean, you want to be able to separate. I got an invite today to go to a Q&A with Mel Gibson, and I went. That's a hard no. It's hard. I mean, I'm a Jew, and he has been very vocal, and I know that he's trying to repent. But I've decided that's something I don't want to go to. So there is something to be said about giving money or support. I don't know. It's so complicated. And I feel like without going into all the details, which I don't think we really should do, it's hard to talk about.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the movie.
Frantic.
What did you think of Frantic?
I liked it when I saw it. It's a little boring.
It's interesting because I saw it, I realize now I saw it from when it started to get really, really exciting. I think it's really interesting, and I think that it's a kind of 80s thriller that we don't really have anymore.
Like, what do you mean? Just, like, the ones that aren't necessarily constant thrills?
Yeah, and I'm okay with that. Like, it's not, you know, every second that there's action. I don't think this is the best of them, necessarily. I enjoy it. I remember liking it a lot. I think it has some really amazing moments. But that was also my issue once we get to Crystal Skull, is it was action, 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 action. And at one point I wanted to scream, just talk to each other.
Yeah.
Just talk to each other. Is there's something to be said about having sort of a nicely paced thriller drama where things actually unravel, come out.
Yeah. I don't know. I liked it. It was just very...
It's just not your favorite.
No. There's nice parts. But it's just not my favorite.
Why don't we talk about it? So what's your favorite part?
The teddy bear.
The teddy bear scene.
Of course the teddy bear.
Oh my god, we didn't do a summary.
I could do the summary in like 2 minutes.
Do it.
It's basically a movie where a guy and his wife go to Paris. He's a businessman. He gets real tired, goes to sleep, and then wakes up realizing his wife is like nowhere to be found and he can't find her. So he goes and
he's
like...
he's a doctor.
He's a doctor, that's right. So he's frantically looking around.
Frantic.
Ha! Frantically looking around Paris, trying to find her. He enlists the help of this young girl. And then the whole movie is this, like, them trying to figure out what happened to his wife. And there's, like, people trying to murder him. And
then they find out, I think the biggest thing is what I think is probably the MacGuffin, is that they find out that what they're after is this sort of cryon thing that is a, I wrote it down because it was so confusing. A small electronic switch used to detonate nuclear devices.
Didn't she have it?
Yeah. So what, a big thing that I feel like has been taken into other movies and you look at it and you go, oh, well, this is cliche, but I feel like this is the first time probably that this happened, before it was taken, was they pick up the wrong suitcase.
Oh yeah.
So his wife has a suitcase and then this girl, Michelle,
was supposed to
pick up
the suitcase, but his wife didn't. So then
she put Harrison Ford's wife's suitcase in a locker, and so it had her information in it, so they were able to go kidnap her to get the suitcase.
I don't understand that.
Here's the thing. I think that it's very well-crafted screenplay.
All they needed to do was just knock on the door and be like, we switched suitcases. That was it. Kidnapping was
here's
necessary.
Here's the thing. That's what I thought when it first started. And I was like, I don't understand why they didn't just say, go upstairs and get the suitcase. But then I realized what happened was that they didn't know that the suitcases were switched. They thought that they had been fucked over. Because what they did was she was supposed to take... So this girl, Michelle, who is played by... let's see if I can say her name right. Emmanuel Signer?
I'm assuming it's French.
Of course.
Probably Signe, but I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not good with the French. She actually was living with Polanski at the time. She was 21. And they got married, and they have 2 kids now. She went to San Francisco, and then she smuggled back this device in a Statue of Liberty.
Yeah.
Which I don't know how she got in San Francisco, but okay. It's a symbolism of it, because there's like a replica of the Statue of Liberty in Paris that they use a lot as, a symbolism. And then she gets scared because she thinks she's being followed. Instead of just taking that and putting it in the locker like she's supposed to so that the bad people can take it, she puts the whole suitcase in. So then the bad people come and they go, oh, she stole it, but here's the suitcase of the person. We're going to go get her. So they don't. I realized that as it was going on, they don't know that the suitcases were switched. Yeah, because that's exactly when they took her. I was like, wait a second. Just say, hey, lady, go upstairs and let's get the suitcase. So that's what I think happened. But to talk about the opening, from a screenplay point of view, I realized it was like the kind of movie they probably would have showed us in screenwriting class. Because there's so many great little clues that you get in that opening. You get that he doesn't speak French.
Yeah.
Which is really important. That he needs his glasses to read. Mm-hmm. You get that he's a doctor. Like, there's a great line where his wife is like, please hold the doctor's calls. Like, all of these sort of, like, little references in the dialogue that comes out naturally for you to know who he is.
Rather than you have to, like...
say it.
I'm a doctor.
Da-da-da-da. It comes out naturally. And then you also get the sense, based on everything his wife does, that he can't really live without her.
No.
That he relies on his wife for a lot. She takes air of everything, including the fact that she has to read all the French for him. Like, I thought the really great scene was he tries to take out his glasses and she's like, oh, let me read it for you. And at first I thought, oh, because he can't see. And then I realized, no, she has to translate everything for him because he doesn't speak French. So I just thought that was really interesting.
Then she's gone.
She's Gone, played by Betty Buckley, who had just won the Tony for Cats.
Who was she in Cats?
Grisabella, I think. I don't know Cats very well, but that's the only name that I know.
Grisabella is the one that sings Memories.
Yes, that would be her. I knew her from watching reruns of Eight is Enough when I was a kid.
Yeah, because Memories is Grisabella. She has Memories all alone in the moonlight.
Yeah, that's a really good impression, I have to say.
I hate Cats. That's all I got for you.
I've never seen it because I have no interest in seeing Cats.
My roommate saw the new one.
Was it any good?
She said no.
Did she like Cats?
No.
Because there are people who like Cats. I'm not a big Andrew Lloyd Webber fan.
Neither am I. I hate Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Not really my thing. Something I thought that was really interesting was they didn't really decide that Harrison would be playing a heart surgeon until after like he was involved. They just felt like it fit his persona. And even though he doesn't do much doctoring in it, so to speak, Harrison did like watch open heart surgery and, you know, go and be like sort of a shadow with these people.
Yeah.
And what I thought was interesting was he said that he learned that there was a certain degree of authority.
Yeah, she was Grisabella. I was looking it up.
Oh, okay.
I was like sitting over here.
I felt like that was it. I know enough about, you know, theater history that I know that, even though I don't know the show. But this is interesting. So he said he felt they had a certain degree of authority that he brought, which I could see that definitely in his character, particularly with heart surgeons, that they are the elite of the doctor world. And he found that they have a certain elegance or vanity of gesture that was common. And then he said, I already gesture enough with my hands, so that wasn't a challenge. I love that he has a sense of humor about the pointing.
The point at
least. Yeah. There's a whole, I think, like, well, there are two. There's the picture spam of him pointing. But there actually is a video of him jumping on people also, which is in the first clip, I think it's from this movie.
Harrison!
We should probably also talk about, which I think should be a new segment on the show, how did Harrison Ford try to kill himself this time?
Okay, good. How did he try and kill himself?
Okay, so, the scene, there's this really amazing scene where he's climbing on a roof and he drops everything and then he falls off this, he's hanging on this antenna.
Uh-huh.
He held on to that 50 feet above a soundstage with no cables.
Why?
He wanted the realism of it because he felt like a stuntman would make it look too, like, perfect. And that this wasn't Indiana Jones. This was, like, a surgeon. This was just a regular guy who wouldn't normally do something like this. And he felt that he wanted to do him justice.
So why couldn't he just put cables on?
Yeah, that, I don't know. I mean, maybe back then they didn't have the ability to take them out or... I don't know. But some of the people on set felt that they had to leave because they couldn't, like, they were watching it made them too nervous.
Yeah, because he could have died. I mean, if it's only 50 feet, that's not terrible, but it's still...
I mean, you can die from falling downstairs, you know, if you just hit the wrong place.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter, but that, I mean, to me, that's really high, but that's just me.
And that's stupid.
You
should have just... Oh, Harrison...
I don't know, I kind of admire him, but I also, he's also kind of
stupid.
Being an idiot. Oh, and this is something he also really liked about the movie, that it was actually about a guy who really loved his wife, which was, I think, a really sort of beautiful part of it. He's enticed by that girl, Michelle, a lot. She takes her clothes off, he closes the door. She's sort of this, I think, male fantasy thing,
yeah.
And he's just like, nope. I love my life. My wife. My life? My wife.
My wife.
He said he thought it was interesting to see a happy relationship. It's nice to have a relationship with a woman that's not caustic, jokey, or glib. But he did take his anxiety and frustration home because Melissa and Malcolm were staying there in Paris with him. And it was hard for him to shake sort of that feeling, which I think I can understand. Like, I don't think it's necessarily a method thing. But if you spend all day in a heightened emotion of anxiety and frustration, you're going to bring it home.
Like, you're gonna be total sense. You're gonna be frantic.
I thought you would find this interesting. One of the producers described the Michelle character as a subterranean Holly Golightly.
I disagree.
I think so too.
I saw that on your notes, and I said I am not addressing that.
Now, when he means subterranean, does he mean like a dark version of her? Because she's definitely not a manic pixie dream girl.
I think he thinks she's a dark Holly-Golightly, but that means he doesn't understand Holly-Golightly, because that's not what Holly-Golightly is like at all.
Well, this is definitely a very male perspective movie.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a scene where the Michelle character goes in the, she comes through the back window of a car when they're being shot at, and you just see, like, her thong and her ass. And then she's wearing a really tight shirt, tight skirt. And I was like, oh, really? Okay. But it felt like they sort of were making her sort of this male fantasy character. I felt like with a bit, it's funny because I didn't think she was bad, even though she was a model. This was like her first movie and she was playing very sort of cold Parisian and it worked. I feel like if there had been someone maybe who had been a better actor, their scenes together would have been a little more interesting. She just felt sort of like this distant being, which might have been the point, I guess. Like, it didn't bother me so much, but I kept thinking, wow, if this had been maybe like a better actor, I wonder if it would have felt more like a two-person move and not just sort of
him
and she just being sort of a sexy, pretty. She wasn't bad. It wasn't what I think something else might have been a little more interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
But I know it doesn't sound like it, but I actually really like it.
Yeah, it's a good movie. I don't know. I watched it that one. It's one of those that I like watched that one time and I'm like, cool. Scene frantic.
The only thing that really bugged me was, and maybe this is also on purpose, was he was leaving his fingerprints everywhere. Like, literally at one point he closes the door and he, like, palms it. Like, he literally just palms the whole door. And I was like, oh! And then there's the scene where he takes the answering machine, takes the answering machine tape out of the guy's machine. But then puts his hands over everything.
But back then that wasn't as big of a deal.
What do you mean? Fingerprints?
I mean, they were, but now, like, in today's world is where you have to watch because they can literally find.
I don't agree. Fingerprints have been a thing since the 30s.
Yeah, but not they didn't have nearly the technology that they have now.
I don't think
now.
He's thinking of DNA, but fingerprints are fingerprints.
Yeah.
There's tons of 80s movies where someone takes a handkerchief and like wipes off the doorknobs or something. Like,
yeah, I guess.
But maybe that's also a testament to what Harrison was saying about, you know, not being very, you know, stylish. Falling off a roof. This guy doesn't really know what he's doing.
Yes, he's just.
Yeah, but everything he touched, I was like, oh, they're gonna think that you killed this guy. See, that's the thing too that we didn't really talk about with the summary is that it sort of fits as sort of what has become sort of this classic thriller is, you know, guy gets stuck in something that he's in over his head, keeps coming across people. You know, who are being killed.
Yeah.
That looks like maybe he would have done it. I think it's just a really interesting movie.
Yeah, it's not bad at all. I enjoyed it. I don't know.
It's got some cool character actors in it as well.
Yeah.
John Mahoney from Frasier, the dad from Frasier.
Yeah.
Is one of the people at the embassy. And then David Huddleston, who's the Big Lebowski. And was in Blazing Saddles. There's like two lines. He's in the club.
Okay.
When some of the people recognize him. I think Harrison's really good in this movie.
Yeah. No, he's very good. He hit Witness. And then it was just like he became. Not that he was ever a bad actor. But it was like, oh, no. He's a good actor. Like, look at all him. Look at these movies he's great in.
He's sort of hitting his stride.
Yeah.
And I think we're seeing what I sort of was saying last time was. All of a sudden, there are, like, certain aspects of him that are becoming a lot more familiar to, like, oh, this is, you know, we're going to get into sort of the 80s, 90s Harrison Ford, which I think most of us sort of remember him from being alive ourselves. and it's like he hit a stride.
Yeah.
It's like he got comfortable. He probably, we're talking about in the past, you know, have more confidence. And then is working with people who admire him and let him, you know, sort of, you know, take chances
and do what he wants to do.
Yeah, and add things to the script, come up with ideas. Something also as well as this script had a script doctor.
Ooh.
Which I thought would be interesting to talk about since Carrie Fisher is a very famous script doctor. Do you want to tell people what that is? Who may not know what a script doctor is?
I don't know what a script doctor is.
Oh, you don't? No. Okay, you said, ooh, I thought. So a script doctor is someone who's hired, who's probably, you know, quite witty and a very good writer to kind of season the script. They kind of go through it, change some of the dialogue. They're not necessarily going to change any sort of major plot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, maybe, but this person does not get credited. It's, they're sort of, you know, sort of saving something. For example, with Hook, Carrie Fisher only rewrote some of Tinkerbell's dialogue.
Interesting.
In fact, I've heard this a couple of times where literally they brought in a woman to like make the female character a little more real. But mostly I find like here's an example of people who like become sort of famous script doctors, and I think that they have something in common is they're very witty. Elaine May, who wrote Primary Colors and The Birdcage, mm-hmm. and also we'll talk about when we get to Working Girl, pretty much with Mike Nichols, who directed Working Girl, we're at the beginning of Second City, but I want to say that because that's a really cool discussion. Tom Stoppard, wonderful playwright, and wrote Shakespeare in Love.
Mm-hmm.
He actually did script doctoring on Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Stoppard was the Shakespeare thing.
I just said, yeah.
No, like he wrote some. What are their names? I can't think of their names. Something and Something Are Dead from Hamlet.
Oh, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, yes. Are Dead, which, like, is a wonderful
something
play.
Something and Something Are Dead.
And then
he
I was like,
did it.
Yeah, so he's really more known as a playwright, and he obviously won the Oscar for Shakespeare in Love, but he's also been brought in because he's a very witty, smart guy. I thought this was funny. I found out that Quentin Tarantino was a script doctor for It's Pat.
Why?
I needed help. And Crimson Tide. Josh Whedon worked on Speed. But he also worked on Waterworld.
You didn't make that movie any better.
Nope. So, you know, Aaron Sorkin worked on The Rock, is I think the most famous script doctoring that he's done. And I didn't know this. He worked on Schindler's List. Carrie also did Sister Act, Wedding Singer, Lethal Weapon 3.
It's a good one.
And you can make a lot of money doing this because you're sort of, you know, kind of saving the script. In the 30s, Ben Hecht, who was a famous playwright, did that a lot in script. And you just get uncredited, but you get a lot of money. I don't think Carrie does it as much anymore.
She's fine.
Yeah, she's good. So this, the script doctor in this was...
She's just liking my tweets. Living her life.
Going to Italy for her birthday.
Yeah. I asked her how she felt about Colin Firth. And she
I saw
liked
that.
It.
As the podcast, I asked her publisher if she'd be doing any book signings or talks when it comes out, and she liked it.
Carrie.
So a little spoiler there for you. Let's see, what else is there? There's not really much to talk about because it's just a very well put together movie. And he's very naked in it.
Oh, yeah. There's a shower scene in the beginning.
Oh, I forgot about the shower
scene. There's a teddy bear.
Yeah, the teddy bear scene I feel like has become very, very famous, which comes out of the scene of him almost falling off the roof, which is really exciting. And then he finds the girl Michelle, who he's trying to help him find his wife, is being interrogated by these Israeli guys who are also looking for the detonator. And so he decides to sneak into her bedroom, take off all his clothes, and pretend to be her lover, who's just woken up.
And he just puts a teddy bear over his penis.
Yeah, which is a little unrealistic.
Teddy bear over your dick.
And then he gets punched, and he manages to still hold the teddy bear in the secure place so not to get an X.
Yep.
So that's...
Had to make sure you couldn't see that.
So that didn't work so much. I also found out that this was really weird. So Gym Tonic is mentioned. It's a gym at the time in the 80s, mm-hmm. in France. And I just assumed it was made up. And then I was at work and someone said, oh, I just got this email from Gym Tonic. And I was like, wait, what? Why did you happen to say that out loud? I just watched this movie. And then I Googled it, and in the 80s, it was started by two women, actually,
mm-hmm.
Was like very big, particularly in Europe.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I guess at the time, if someone saw that, that would be like, oh, okay, that's very European. also something that I thought was interesting that I've been hearing a lot, a lot of sort of older things that I've been watching, or like I went to the SNL exhibit that they had over the summer in New York, is a telex.
What is that?
So a telex, I found out, is like a telegram.
Mm-hmm.
Only unlike a telegram, which is working in Morse code, this actually went through the telephone line.
Oh, so it was just a message, but it, like, yeah, you played a game of telephone to get your message.
And it would make sense that you might send a telex overseas, because at that time, overseas calls in the 80s were really, really expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So in the 70s and 80s, things that I've been either like watching this, or it's like something made now that takes place then, they're mentioning this. And there's also the new show, was it Girl? I'm confusing it with the book. Good Girl Revolt, I think, is the show. But the book has a longer title, so I always confuse it. They're talking about telex. So I was like, what? They're talking about telex in a completely different way. I got to figure out what the hell this is. And they're referring to it like a teletype.
Mm-hmm.
That they're getting the same technology is being used for them to get all the news on the teletype. It was sort of really interesting. And a lot of the things that we're talking about, it almost feels like an ancient text message.
Oh, the ways to get your text messages, folks.
You got to put it in the teletype machine, and then it's got to print out like a telegram.
For somewhere else.
Yeah. So I don't know why certain people refer to it as telex. Like, I thought maybe telex was like a company. So if anyone who was of age during the 70s and 80s and can let us know, because it's sort of interesting. But I think it was just maybe people using a word that was out of date, which didn't really mean the same thing.
Yeah.
Because I assumed, oh, well, this must have been just in the 70s and 80s. But the telex really kind of started in like the 30s, 40s, or 50s. Well, that's a big range. But it, at the time where you hear people talking about telegrams, technically the technology was telex.
Yeah.
Anyway, I thought that was really interesting. So, well, he was in France. It was the 10-year anniversary of Star Wars. So even though everything I've read says that Harrison isn't one for notes or postcards, he wrote a note to George Lucas on the anniversary. And it was, George Lucas, makers of myths, champion of the innocent, defender of the faith or force, if you will, my colleague, my friend, let's face it, my mentor, best wishes. It is almost Halloween here. Best wishes on the 10th anniversary of Star Wars. Love, Harrison.
Interesting.
Yeah, so he sent that. So to add to Harrison's stress level, after the movie was finished, he was flying on Clint Eastwood's private plane. He was a passenger. And they had to make an emergency landing. And he had his young son and his wife, and it really did not add to his stress level.
And
I couldn't find it, but I feel like incidents like this are one of the reasons why he started to become more avid in learning to fly again.
Because he just couldn't handle it?
Well, yeah. I know someone asked, like, aren't you nervous, like, having, you know, your loved ones in your plane with you? And he said, no, because I'm the one who's flying the plane.
Yeah.
So I was like, I feel like maybe this is maybe one of the reasons, but I couldn't find necessarily actual proof of that. So the movie actually did not make its money back, which technically makes it a failure.
Yeah.
But it did better in France than it did in the U.S. It's funny because the bios that I've been reading were like, oh, it was the very mixed reviews. But according to Rotten Tomatoes, it was a critical success. That out of 40 reviews, it was like 78% positive. Siskel and Ebert, who were very big in the 80s, gave it 2 thumbs up.
Two
thumbs up. Pat Collins of WWOR TV, which I know in New York was very big at the time, said it's Polanski's best film ever. The Washington Post called it vintage Polanski. The USA Today said it was the most underrated film of 1988. Newsweek said Ford makes you realize what a movie star really is, someone who's even on screen. Well, every move on screen is totally enjoyable and indefinitely an inevitable. What the hell? I didn't write this right at all. Is a synthesis of his own personality and the role he's playing, which was not what I actually wrote. I had reversed some of these.
I'm going to read what Lauren actually wrote.
Let's see.
Ford makes you realize what a movie star really is. Someone whose every on-screen move is totally enjoyable and indefinable synthesis of his own personality and the role he's playing. That kind of makes sense.
Yeah, but I feel like there's something that's out of order. I've been doing way too much. And
Lauren and I have both decided we do too much.
But we do it all for you.
Uh-huh.
I'm doing a show, which is after The Slayer, on November 1st. So I'm prepping for that. So then after that, between now and Working Girl, I'm just going to sleep.
I need that.
Yeah. Yeah, so unfortunately, not another success for Mr. Ford. But no. I feel like in retrospect, people consider it a classic movie, which yeah. I did too. I was surprised when I read that it didn't do very well.
Yeah. No, it is. It's... Who knows? Words just failed me halfway through that sentence.
That's okay. Now I don't feel so alone. If you want to wish Rachel a happy birthday,
tweet at me.
Tweet at her. Tweet at the show. And we'll remind you. And please vote. Oh, wait. You already did.
Hell is opened. Well, this one's a short one, but we can... Let's do our little closing business.
Yeah, so... oh, wait. No, we're not going to do the thing. Or do that after. The improv thing.
No. Okay. I'm too tired. We were going to do an improv thing that was us improvising what happens.
Well, now let's not even tell them.
I'm going to tell them. But my brain is done.
I thought it would be funny to bring back Fordcast Theater. So yell at Rachel because Rachel doesn't want to do it.
It was Halloween last night. I'm tired.
Well, let's talk about this a little bit then. I find it odd. Now, I understand the movie is supposed to end the way it started, which is him and his wife in a cab. She's got her head on his shoulder. Rachel is about to interact.
I'm just laying down.
So, for those can't see, Rachel is pretending to do what Betty Buckley did.
Oh, no, I was not. I just was literally laying down. If you could see, Lauren is recording like a professional, and I'm literally lounging across my other couch.
This is what you get for the big bucks.
You get me lounging on a couch.
Hopefully everyone can hear you.
Hey, it's fine. My voice carries. It's also raining.
It's so pretty, though. It's really nice here in New York, as global warming ruins us all. Anyway, because it's what, like 80 now? And it was 50. 40? Yeah, I fell asleep with my electric blanket and woke up to summer.
I haven't left my apartment, but continue.
Anyway, yeah, I have to come to her. But yeah. I got her an awesome birthday gift. You want to tell them about your birthday gift?
She got me the I Love You, I Know pins.
Because she's been complaining about not having them.
And then she made me a card that is all of the loves of my life on it.
I did.
Chris Pine, Colin, Harrison.
I do collage art, and so it was very relaxing. We'll put a picture on the site.
It's very pretty.
Anyway, okay, so it ends the way... In fact, I know how the movie ends. So when I started the movie, I thought that it accidentally started at the end, and I tried to rewind it. I was like, this is the end of the movie. Wait, what? Oh, it starts this way, too. And that's when I realized I had not seen the beginning of the movie. I had turned it on when he fell off the roof, which is like about 20 minutes, almost an hour in. But I guess when you're a kid, you don't know. You're just like, oh, Harrison Ford in a movie. Yeah, this is it. So he puts his fingerprints all over everything. He runs away from the American embassy after Michelle pepper sprays them all, or maces them all, including Harrison Ford's character. They're just going to get on a plane and go back to America, and they're not, like... He's probably wanted in questioning of all of these dead people.
Yeah.
I guess I understand why it ended that way, because Roman Polanski can't come to the United States and film the rest of the movie. And I see how they wanted to sort of end it as they sort of began it, and it was, sort of just this time in his life, jet lag, not getting any sleep, having to, deal with this horrible emergency that's happened in his life. But I just kept thinking, he's in a lot of trouble. Like, they still don't know if he he killed the original guy because his fingerprints are all over his apartment.
Yeah.
I'm sure they can find, they know about the cassette tape that he stole that has his message on it. Why would he take that? He ran away from the embassy people again and didn't do what they wanted. Yes, his wife is safe, but there's so many consequences that I feel like this guy is going to have to face.
Oh yeah, definitely. He's going to jail when he gets home.
or be extradited back, or like, not everything's okay.
No, not at all. He has some issues. He gotta work out.
Yeah, that's what I think. So if you haven't been on our website, oh, I should also mention Roman Polanski is known for movies like Chinatown and Rosemary's Baby. Like, we didn't really talk about sort of his history.
No.
And he wrote this with longtime collaborator, I'll try, Gerard Branch. How's that? I tried to be French.
Where is this? Yeah, it's good enough. I think that's, I don't know what you would say, Branch.
No, that's very American. Let me try it again. Gerard Branch.
It's not Blanche, there's no L. B-R-A-C-H.
I'm being French.
It still wouldn't be Blanche.
Okay. Gerard.
Now you sound Russian.
I do. Here's the problem. I'm pretty good at accents, but I never have been able to do a French accent.
Oh, the French accent's not that hard.
Okay, you say it then.
I'm not trying to say that.
Because it'll sound Russian if I say it.
Gerard. No. Gerard.
Gerard.
Branch.
Branch. Oh, that sounds good. Gerard Branch.
Yes.
Aren't you glad you tuned in to this week's episode?
To this episode?
Yeah. So, if you haven't checked out our website, what's our website, Rachel?
TheForecastPodcast.com.
Now, if you couldn't hear that through Rachel's yawn,
it's TheForecastPodcast.com.
Say it again.
TheForecastPodcast.com.
Where you can find our archive of episodes. You can find links to review and rate us on iTunes, which would be so amazing because the more reviews that we get, the more iTunes will help us find other listeners. In fact, if everyone listening today tells one friend about our show, we will double our audience.
Oh, shit.
I know, I'm so smart.
That's how math works.
Sometimes I'm pretty good at the maths.
Jeez.
To quote the British, the maths.
The maths.
The maths. You can also find our show notes for every episode. So anything we've talked about, sometimes we'll put in like extra links to sort of like read more about it. Mm-hmm. The more you know, there's an NBC Rainbow. NBC Rainbow. And you can also find us on social media where we have tons of contests. So we have two types of contests. We have the one where you can just follow us on all of our social networks and then we'll be like, here's a Twitter contest, here's an Instagram contest, here's an overall contest. You can win small, really cool Harrison Ford, sometimes Carrie Fisher, Star Wars, Indiana Jones related type gifts, prizes. But what I feel like a lot of people don't realize is that by listening, you can win an even bigger prize of something much more awesome because we keep the more awesome-y stuff. I made up that word, awesome-y.
You get the biggest prize of all, listening to me and Lauren talk.
Exactly. And then you can go on our website and you can go to contests and go to season contests. So we're obviously in the fall contest right now.
Mm-hmm.
You answer a very easy trivia question about something that we talked about. It's not hard. You don't have to do any research. Just have to listen. And then every social media that you follow gets you an extra entry. And then at the end of the fall, we will put it all into random.org, which is what I use to pick the winner. So it's fair. And you could win, for example, the fall contest is either your choice of a really amazing vintage designed Raiders of the Lost Ark poster or Blade Runner. Your choice. Last time in the summer contest, it was a full bag of Harrison Ford swag.
Yeah.
Who knows what the winter contest will be, but we have some awesome stuff coming up. And all you have to do is listen. You don't have to do anything. No retweeting, no reblogging. Just listen, fill out the questionnaire, and you are entered. And then you can enter every 2 weeks until the end of fall, and then we'll announce the winner and then do another contest.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, so our website is fun. You can also help us bring you the podcast by donating on our website. The money goes to things like watching movies. Most importantly, it goes to us paying shipping to mail you all these amazing prizes that have been donated by amazing artists. So if you go on our website, also under giveaway sponsors, you can see everyone who has ever in the past or present donated their wonderful art to us. And you can check out their websites and their links so that you can buy stuff from them or see what's coming up to win.
Yeah.
Which is cool. We got some new stuff that I need to add. We got some pins that say, I love you, I know. Not yours. They're different pins. magnets. We got some really neat stuff. We have some Han Solo quotes coming. Stickers nice. That are in the mail. So it's a really fun time to be a part of the podcast.
Yeah, it is.
Where can we find you on social media?
You follow me on Twitter at Rachel Leishman. Follow me on Tumblr at Rach Solo. And you can read my articles on Culturists. It's R. Leishman.
You can find me on Twitter at Lauren Milberger. That's LaurenMilberger. You can find me on ForcesOfGeek.com, where I have a monthly column. You can find us, as in the show, on Instagram, Tumblr, and Facebook at The Fordcast Podcast, and on Twitter at The Fordcast PC. Instagram is particularly curated towards whatever movie is coming up, which is fun. Although some things like Mosquito Coast ran out of pictures. Not a lot of pictures for that.
No.
No, not happening. I think that's pretty much it. Please send us an email or talk to us on social media about your thoughts on the show. If you have any ideas for topics or things you'd like us to cover, please add to the conversation because it's fun. And you can either do it on any of the social medias or you can email us at thefordcastpodcast@gmail.com.
And next week we're doing...
Well, 2 weeks.
2 weeks we're doing...
Working Girl.
Oh, that's the next
one. The river run.
Oh, geez.
Let all the dreamers wake the nation.
Okay. On that note.
Did you know I'm your
goodbye.
Bye, everybody. Bye.